Chefs Without Restaurants, episode 67 with Mr. Bake.
Like I just said to you earlier, I was that young black kid watching Emeril Lagasse, watching BAM happen. But that was an inspiration for me. But what happens when we change that face and we change that person, we put a person of color there and then maybe put somebody in the LGBTQ community in there. So now you're now saying to other chefs who represent them, who feel like them, or other young chefs, I too can be there. I too can do that. That's really it is. It's just about inspiring the next generation or inspiring your peers.
This is the Chefs Without Restaurants podcast with your host, Chris Spear. Each week, I'll be speaking with food entrepreneurs and people in the culinary industry. If you're interested in learning more about our organization dedicated to helping people build and grow their food businesses, look us up on the web at chefswithoutrestaurants.com and .org and on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Chefs Without Restaurants. Now, enjoy the show. This week, I have Chef Kareem Queeman, better known as Mr. Bake. He's the owner and operator of Mr. Bake Suites, a small dessert studio located in Largo, Maryland. In the past few years, he's done a few television appearances on Food Network, Fox, ABC, and Discovery Family. We talk a little bit about that. I know a lot of our listeners are maybe interested in how you get on a cooking TV show, so he does share some of his tips. He's also a 2020 Business of Pride honoree by the Washington Business Journal. Mr. Bake prides himself on diversity, inclusivity, community outreach, and always making the world a better place. As someone who is a gay black man, we talk a lot about representation in the food business and also how people are represented in the food media. We also talk about his love of baking, and I talk to him about what his thoughts are on baking with cake mixes. He doesn't do that for your info, but he says there's no shame in that. Good to know. I use my fair share of cake mixes. We also talk about things like using scales and what position to hire for when you're looking to take your business to the next level. It's not a one-size-fits-all formula, but he talks a little bit about what worked for him. I hope you enjoy the show. As always, please let us know what you think. If you listen to the show on iTunes, I'd really love for you to go rate and review the show. It would help us so much. And also, I recently launched the Chefs Without Restaurants newsletter. So in the link to our profile and on the page where you can find our podcast, there is a place to sign up for that. I promise not to spam you or send you too many emails, but please check that out as well. Now, time for the show. So thanks a lot and have a great week. Welcome, everyone. This is Chris Spear with the Chefs Without Restaurants podcast. Today, I have Kareem Queeman, better known as Mr. Bake. He's the owner and operator of Mr. Bake Suites, a small dessert studio located in Largo, Maryland. He's been baking for 20 plus years now. In the years that Mr. Bake Suites has operated, he's done a few television appearances on Food Network, Fox, ABC, and Discovery Family. He's also a 2020 Business of Pride honoree by the Washington Business Journal. Mr. Bake prides himself on diversity, inclusivity, community outreach, and always making the world a better place, one cake at a time. Welcome to the show, Mr. Bake.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for coming on the show. It's good to talk to you virtually. I guess I haven't seen you in person in probably close to a year now.
Yes, actually, it has been a year. You're absolutely right about that. Jeesh.
Yeah, time flies, right? Like these 8 months have passed by in a blink of an eye.
Right. You know what? And I always say COVID is its own year. So it's like when you say anything after, anything post-COVID, you're like, when was that again?
Yeah. I think we need to find a new way to kind of date things, kind of like the BC and AD kind of like, we're just going to like start the clock again. Can we like, when this is over, can we call it year one or something? Right. And it's all going to be like the earlier times or something like that.
Before COVID, the dawn.
Yeah.
Before
yeah COVID. The new BC. I would love to kind of start the show with a little bit of your culinary background. So have you always been interested in sweets and working in desserts? Like I've read some interviews where you said at like the age of five or something, you were interested in sweets. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So it interchanges. I finally got the story locked down correctly. It was the age of 10 and fell in love with sweets. Always, you know, kids, you always either like some kind of candy, but mine was baked goods, you know, apple pie, layered cake, pound cake, give it to me all, forget about dinner type situation. And then that curiosity, excuse me, that love of sweets went into curiosity. Like, oh, well, you know what? Since I only get cake on these occasions, now I want to make my own cake. Because, you know, as a kid, you see all the Betty Crockers and the Pillsbury's that look bright and vibrant. So it's like, I want to make my own cake. So that's kind of how that started.
Yeah, I remember being the same way. I didn't move into the pastry profession, but I remember in like fourth grade, like I had a friend who had surgery or something, or he broke his arm and like baking him a cake. And everyone kind of made fun of me. Like, you're like a third grader baking a cake for a friend. It's like, yeah, who doesn't love cake? Like, I'll bake you a cake if, you know, you fall in a puddle. Like, any reason to make a cake, right?
Yeah, exactly. I love the fall in the puddle. I got you on the cake. I mean, and that was me though. So I'm from New York City originally, and I was the kid hustling and bustling on in rush hour with a cake dome or some box and a book. I always was a reader, you know what I mean? So I'm always like fitting through the doors, reading a book and holding a cake. I gave every classmate a cake. They paid me, you know, cents on a dollar, like, you know, buy the cake mix. So I started out cake mixes. So it's like, buy the cake mix, the eggs and the milk and whatever I needed to create your cake. And same thing with teachers. They poured back into me and stuff like that. So that was fun, actually.
Yeah, I want to jump in really quickly about cake mixes, because I talked to a lot of people about this. I don't think they're a terrible thing. I mean, obviously, I'm sure not making your cakes from a cake mix, but, you know, like, these companies have spent probably like billions of dollars in R&D. Like, I don't think it's terrible to take a cake mix, at least to start. And, you know, I've doctored cake mixes and done some really cool things. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Let me tell you something. I love mixes. Mixes was the start for me. You know what I mean? My mother, my family comes from the South, and my mom wasn't the best baker. Actually, she didn't bake anything, like no baked goods, but she can cook. So, you know, she was like, we're going to make a cake out the box. Like, I started out the box. I actually did box mixes for a very long time. I worked at a lot of great bakeries in New York City that still use mixes to this day. Some of them even helped with, that's how old they are, they helped with like Pillsbury's current mix that they have now. You know what I mean? So I don't think anything's wrong with mix. I think mix keeps your cost of goods down, especially if you are like learning, you don't really know how to bake, but you know how to decorate, things like that. And then you can take little things up and doctor it, you know, like take out the water, add milk in there, instead of using margarine, use the butter, you know, things like that. Add extracts and spices and things like that, like fresh ingredients that will turn that box into something totally different. I remember, damn, now you got me in a story, if you don't mind me. So I worked at a bakery, and they use box mixes as well. And one of the decorators was like, oh, Kareem, try this cake mix. I was a Duncan Hines butter recipe. She said, substitute water for orange juice, and the cake is going to change. It's going to make an orange cake. She said, not necessarily. And I tried that, baby. That joint was a winner. I was making that cake for a few years. So back to your original comment. Nope. If you got to start at mixes, or your brand is based around mixes, just be truthful about it. Like, you know, don't say you are a from scratch bakery and you don't know how to bake from scratch. Don't do that. Don't lie.
Yeah. Well, most cake recipes don't have what I call a water component. So like, there's no way to switch it in. So like, I started doing chocolate cakes where I would take the water out and put like a stout beer in there, or put coffee or something. And it's really hard to figure out if you find like a chocolate cake mix, it's usually doesn't have like water or some kind of water-based liquid. So the mixes worked really well. So I love like the Ghirardelli triple chocolate cake mix. And I put in stout beer, and then I'll throw in cinnamon and chilies and bake it up. And, you know, the cake mix is like 250, and then you just got two eggs and a little oil. So that's one of my favorites to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And look at that. What you did, you just put so many different flavors in that box cake. If you served me that box cake this weekend, I would not even know the difference. You know, like, to be 100% honest, would not know the difference. But I personally, because I went to culinary school and because learning, I like making baking from scratch. It's very therapeutic to me, being in the kitchen, weighing things out. I know a lot of people listening to this is like, nope, baking, I can't do it. It's the exact science. It's too tedious. And you're absolutely right. You know what I mean? A lot of things you cannot play around with in freestyle if you do not know the metrics as well as you can do with cooking. And I think that's what I like about it a lot more, too, that it takes more time to actually prepare a proper, you know, if it's a French macaron or an eclair or anything like that. You know what I mean? It takes time to prepare these things. So I like that. I like the outcome of the struggle before you, you know, win or see how it comes out.
Yeah, I've really gotten nerdy about weighing things now. You know, I think there's kind of like that pastry chef weighs everything and the culinarian's like freestyle, right? But then, you know, as you get older, it's like, well, we should all be weighing everything. Like I tell everyone, just buy a cheap digital scale, if nothing else. Like I'll put recipes now on my website. I did a lot of bread baking like everyone did when COVID started. And people kept what are the cup measurements? I'm like, I have no idea. Like I'm making focaccia and I'm going to weigh everything. Here's a link to the scale I use. It's like $15 on Amazon. Like if you can't be bothered to spend $15 on a scale, like you shouldn't be baking anyway. Like
that's just my opinion. You shouldn't be baking, right?
Yeah.
Well, don't make it hard for them. You know, most people do not have a scale and they're going to run to any like convenience store to get like, you know, a quick set of like teaspoon cups and measuring cups because they think that they know that's the quickest thing to do what they need to do to make this little, you know, whatever dish you're trying.
I've written some recipes where I said it's half of a third cup. Like how stupid is that? But what's half of a third cup? Because I was wearing it in grams, like, and I knew how much I wanted. It's like, there's no measurement for that. I don't, you know, maybe it's like 2 tablespoons and 2 teaspoons or something, but I'm like, well, fill up a one third cup halfway. It's like, that's stupid. Just like get a scale and figure out what it is. Like I have no other way and I have no patience for that anymore. Like
I'm over here dying at you. I love it though. I love how you're over it. And I can do both. You know, I started out with weight measurements. So before I went to scale in college, I was doing cups and teaspoons. So I can interchange. Sorry, yeah. I'm laughing at you. I can interchange. And let me tell you something. I know we're probably going to talk about TV shows and competitions, but that was one thing. That really, fact that I bake in small batches and I also knew how to do scale and cup measurements because that's normally what they had. So I was like, oh, bet I can measure my stuff out really quickly.
Yeah, it took a little getting used to, but like I see more even savory chefs using weights. Like as you start to get more cookbooks, you know, it started with like the European chefs. If you get like Rene Redzepi or any of them, like everything's in grams. But then even American chefs started doing it. It's like, well, it's not just baking anymore. So, you know, so I got a couple scales. You know, you look like a little crack dealer with your little microgram scale though, right? Because now, you know, everyone's doing like hydrocolloids or for spices or something. So I've got the 2 scales that when you have the little one where it's like, you know, 0.7 grams of guar gum, it's like you have your very tiny little scale. And I have my little like weights and measure things, like I'm calibrating a scale at the gold exchange or something. It's kind of ridiculous. But.
No, I know exactly what you mean. I know exactly what you mean.
So how did you end up getting to where you are now with your own business, like in an abbreviated kind of version? Like what was your path of now having Mr. Bake Sweets?
Well, honestly, at a young age, I always knew that I wanted to be my own boss. Ironically, I don't know where that spirit came from, but it was always, it still did be. I was like, you know, I had a couple of options that I wanted to do. It was like to be a pastry chef or some type of food chef. I didn't know which chef. Well, I knew it was going to be baking or pastry and teacher or lawyer. And then I wound up going, obviously, the cooking route, baking route. But honestly, I've always knew I was going to work for myself. I've always had that push and drive to be my own boss. It was just about navigating through different bakeries, going to culinary school to really harness those skills to then make me feel comfortable to then say, I want to step out and do my own thing. I had a bucket list, honestly. At like 18, I made a bucket list of all the career options that I wanted within the field, in the food field. So I said I wanted to work front of the house, every department front of the house, and then every position in the back of the house as well. So I mean, dishwasher all the way to your GM and then like a fake district manager of like Crumb's Bake Shop where I used to work. I used to oversee 2 stores.
So did you do that and work every position?
Absolutely, yeah. I was the dishwasher, the cake, the wholesale baker, the decorator, the cupcake person only. I did a couple of cookies. Then I was a cashier, barista only. So yeah, I did every position.
I think you have to be well-rounded, not even just because you want to own your own business, but I think not enough people have worked, you know, like not enough cooks have worked front of the house or worked dishwashing or something like that. And it really makes you well-rounded and you have a great idea of how a whole operation works just by getting in and doing all that stuff.
Absolutely. And I mean, one of the motivating facts was to honestly learn every position because I knew that I would be hiring people for those set positions. And I wanted to be able to speak from their experiences of working in that field or working in that department, whatever it may be in the kitchen. You know, if you were a dishwasher, I know what it is to be a dishwasher. Because I've worked with a lot of business owners, small business owners, that is, that never done, like, wholesale baking. Never, like, done dishwashing. Never done anything. So when they see stuff, they're, like, frantic, and they want you to come and be the savior. You know what I mean? For their business or for whatever's going down.
Yeah, I've even said to my cooks, like, working in the dish room, even for just like one shift, is kind of humbling, but you can kind of see like what's coming back on the plate. You can learn so much, right? Like the wait staff can tell you, oh, the customers, I don't think, like this. And the cooks are kind of like, whatever. But if you're in the dish room and like the broccoli comes back, you know, 95% uneaten on every plate, like there's probably an issue there. Or, you know, if the steak is half eaten, it's either not cooked right, or maybe the portion's too big. Like, you can learn a lot just by auditing what comes back in the dish room alone.
So true. I worked in a couple of catering companies, DC and New York, and I was in the dish room in both of those places, because I never really worked in a restaurant. That's the only place I never really worked at, unless it was like an internship, but I never like fully worked on the line and was busting it down to 2 o'clock in the morning. I haven't done that. Because I knew the path I wanted to go was to be a cake decorator. So I was like, I don't need to do that. but you're right. I looked at all the food. And then when I used to make the desserts for these caterer companies, I used to look back, like, okay, they didn't eat all the chocolate cake, or they didn't eat the apple pie. You know what I mean? They maybe ate the ice cream, but didn't eat this. So you're absolutely right. You did get to see what people liked and didn't like.
And, you know, it also breaks the monotony. I mean, not that, you know, you ever really want to get off the cooking line and go work in the dish room. But like, the last place I worked wasn't a restaurant. We were in contract food. But like, I went to hiring a universal worker, where we let you know when you were hired that like, you might be working in the kitchen, at the bar, in the wait staff, or in the dish room. And it was really interesting that like, you would have a cook split their shift. So they'd do like 4 hours of prep, but then they go be the waiter. So like, when they sold specials, they like had their hand in what they were making during the day, or the guy on the bar that night had been in the kitchen, or, you know, like my sous chef took over the bar a lot of nights, or a lot of nights, you know, one of your line cooks would be a dishwasher. And just kind of the synergy, like, it built a respect for the people doing those jobs, because I think there is the wall of like us and them, like the cooks versus wait staff or something. But it was really interesting to see how things were impacted. Like, if you go and you pick up a bar shift after you've been prepping half the day, like, you might have a better idea of what cocktails are going to pair with the food, because you were actually the one prepping the food for that night and a different cook was executing it. And I really like that. I'd love to see more places doing that. Maybe it's
that's a great concept. Actually,
what we got into is we needed to hire a lot of part-time people, and where I was working, nobody wanted part-time work. Like, it was really hard to get a wait staff come in and just work like a 4 hour shift or something. So we wanted to offer them 8 hour shifts. So it's like, will you come in and work like, you know, 12 to eight? So 12 to four, you can work in the kitchen, and 4 to 8, you work as a wait staff or something like that. So it was a way to kind of give everyone full-time hours. So instead of having a ton of part-time people who weren't really invested, we had almost exclusively full-time people who were getting paid benefits and all of that, and they were really invested in the business, but they kind of switched around. I just let them know, like, your schedule is going to have you on some cooking shifts, some wait shifts, some bar shifts, and it was really interesting.
Oh, that sounds dope. I like that. I like that, though. It's cross-training, too, so it's really good.
Yeah, and it really helps when you have a call out. You know, when you have a call out on a Friday night, it's like, I can pull one of 20 people to pick up the shift, not just like one of five.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You actually make your pool of support bigger. Yeah, absolutely agree.
Where'd the name Mr. Bake come from?
So Mr. Bake actually came from one of my close friends out in New York City when we met at a sneaker store, and we was just chopping it up actually over sneakers. And then he was like, oh, you know what? You know, anyway, like, later on we became friends, and he was like, I'm going to call you Mr. Bake because you bake cakes. Literally, it was that quick. He's very witty, though, and quick on his feet. So then obviously he started introducing me to everybody, that all of his friends, as Mr. Bake, or Bake for short, because we all were around the same age. And everybody called me. It was to the point where 3-4 years of knowing certain people, they didn't even know my first name.
Yeah, I don't think I've heard you referred to by name anywhere, kind of like on the internet or anything you do, really. It's just, you know, it's great branding. I mean, was that intentional that you carried forward with that? Because it seems like you've really branded yourself really well and have just held on to that.
Yes, that actually was intentional. I had people come in, you know, as PR people come in and work, and I was like, oh, Kareem. And I was like, no, I'm branding myself as Mr. Bake. You know what I mean? It's kind of in my head separating my personal life with the actual brand a little bit, even though they're all intertwined into each other. But it does give me a little break, you know, like I can be Kareem and then I can be Mr. Bake, kind of like a superhero. You know, I always had infatuation with toys and superheroes and stuff like that. So I guess this kind of gives me like a suit up.
Yeah, well, I think it's really smart. And you seem like you're made for that kind of thing. Like all of your photos and videos, you're like smiling, you're like dancing, you have this great personality. And I think that's really important, especially this day and age. I mean, it just seems like you're having a really good time with things. But like, I almost smile just seeing you, like going through your Instagram feed and the videos, like you're always like right now, like you're smiling and happy. And it seems like it's not a show. And that's just your personality. And I think that goes a long way. And you know, it seems like you're a happy person.
Thank you. I appreciate that. As I started to do more television on a national level, I started getting that a lot. You know, a lot of times we do not know our own powers and abilities. You know what I mean? And you're just kind of just, you know, moving through life, you know, not saying like aim, like you're just moving through aimlessly, but, you know, moving through life, making things happen and creating and, you know, finding out and discovering and all of that. But you don't really know your power, you know? And then most recently with all of the TV exposure and like random people who don't know me, and like for yourself, who's only been in presence with me one time, you know, you have such nice things to say. And that really is my personality. You know, I am, you know, the kind of person who wants to make people feel comfortable when you're in a space with me, because I know what it is to be uncomfortable, you know what I mean? Or not wanted or not heard. So I always try to be the opposite for people because I know what the struggle is.
So how did you get into all the TV appearances? Do you have to approach people? Do people come to you? Do you like have a PR company you work for? What's that look like? Because people are always asking me like, do you know how to get on TV show? It's like, well, I've never been on a TV show, so I don't know.
Well, and I think that's going to be like one of the questions people are going to ask me a lot, which is cool because I like talking people through that. But honestly, it was... One was just me thinking about being on a TV show. Let me go backwards. I always watched Food Network. I remember when Emeril Lagasse Live was on Food Network. I was a kid. That was like, bam, was the first thing I remember. My mom used to speak into me like, oh, I'm going to take you on one of those shows one day. And that just brought joy to my heart, you know? So fast forward, now I'm an adult and I'm like, you know, I'm in my brand, I'm moving and shaking, I'm developing things and I'm trying to get the name out there more because I've always wanted to have a household name. So I was like, you know, I'm going to apply for a competition. They were doing like the beginning stages of the baking spring competition situations that Food Network does. And I was like, I'm going to apply for one of those because I felt more comfortable doing a baking show. And I applied. It's a vigorous application. Well, back then it was. We're talking 2015. I started applying. And I didn't get picked. You know, I got all the way up to the second cut. I didn't get picked. And then that didn't defeat me. It did make me go, oh, because you do all this work. So anybody who's talking about wanting to be on TV, be prepared to send photos, be prepared to be on 1,000 when you're on Zoom calls, meaning like you need to show a lot of personality because you're not only showcasing your talent, but you also have to realize you have to bring ratings in for that show. You have to look good on TV. You have to be able to talk and work at the same time. You know what I mean? Because they're going to want you to do those things. So I wound up getting selected for a pilot in 2016. That never got picked up. But that gave me the real life on set, how it felt to be behind a camera, what producers were looking for, the production company, like the owners of the production company gave me big ups. So that put more of a battery in my back to continue to prevail through TV. I'll push through that, I should say. And then I started to apply for another competition, which was the Cake Bosses competition. And we wound up getting that. And to be honest, I wasn't even going to take that competition. And I was like, nah, I'm not going to do this. It's just too much. I had lost my mom in 2017. And prior to losing her, she fought for her life for 7 months. So it was just a really depressing year for me. And her being in New York and me being here in the D.C. area. So when we got the show or got casted for the show, it was just too much. But then I'm glad I wound up doing it. You know, we wound up winning. But it's not even that we won. It was that I had so much fun doing it. And then it reminded me of how I felt in 2016 when I was on set for that pilot. And then from there, I said, you know what? I'm going to probably start doing some more television. And I, in the midst of me thinking that, that same year, which is 2018, I was like, you know what? I need to be a beacon of hope, because there's no representation when it comes to people that look like me. And that's Black or brown people of color, Black or brown chefs who might be openly gay. I'm an openly gay chef. So I was like, there's nobody on TV. There's no personality out there. That's me. That looks like me. That speaks to us or anybody with my background. So I just started to steer the ship straight ahead. And honestly, I know I'm going off because I'm leading up to something. Honestly, what happened was in 2019, a producer hit me and she said, you're too skilled for me. I'm the amateur bakers, but she wanted people that were males. She was having a hard time finding males. And I think really males of color, but she didn't want to say that. So I gave her 6 people. She said, oh my God, thank you so much. When something opens up on my end that I feel that you're the right fit for, I will reach out to you. And what did she do? 6 months later, she reached out to me and said, an opportunity. And she did the entire application for me and said, I'm going to hook you up with my girlfriend, Stacey. She's really cool. You're a star. You got this. So, and that's how it went. And went through connections. You know what I mean? Being nice to people, yeah. Knowing what you want, not knowing how you're going to get where you're going to get to, but really knowing what you want and being nice and showing up.
Well, that's awesome to be able to share the opportunity with other people. You know, you have this chance to potentially do something and to say, like, here are these other people, not knowing that it would come back to you. I mean, that I think speaks to your character too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know you've spoken a lot about, you know, kind of representing, you know, people of brown and black who are openly gay in the community. Like, what are you kind of seeing in the food world? Have there been shifts in the past couple months, years? Like, where do you think things are and what needs to be done?
Well, honestly, right now we're still in a more male and Caucasian dominated field when it comes to the cooking industry, and especially when it comes really just when it comes to showcasing the talent of Black and brown chefs and or LGBTQ. And let's just go with Black and brown chefs. We have so many great talented chefs here in the DMV area, or even in New York City, and they don't get as much recognition as they should. They're not getting the write-ups, you know what I mean, for, you know, the sold out lines and creating new dishes and things like that, because it may not be of a French background, you know, but they're still putting in the hard work and they're still creating revenue and creating a brand from nothing. And I think to me, that still needs to shine some light on that. You know what I mean? Right now, you know, we're in because of COVID, not because of COVID, but due to COVID and due to the strong racial injustice that we're looking at right now in 2020, it's a big spotlight on being a Black and brown business owner. You know what I mean? And then especially within the food industry now, we know that's, you know, we out here in drowning waters, you know what I mean? But, you know, it is shining a light on us. So I think that now we are going to start seeing a pivot and how much diversity comes on media. I just saw an announcement today that Chopped is now going to start introducing, you know, some Black and brown chefs on, Black and brown judges now. You know what I mean? So for so many years, it was only, you know, who were on the judges in a lot of shows. You know what I
think,
I mean?
And I think Top Chef just made that announcement, like, I think as well. So, yeah, you're seeing it in a couple of these shows.
So, yeah, we're going to start seeing that change and that shift, which is needed, because guess what? Like I just said to you earlier, I was that young Black kid watching Emeril Lagasse, watching BAM happen. But that was an inspiration for me. But what happens when we change that face and we change that person, we put a person of color there and then maybe put somebody in the LGBTQ community in there. So now you're now saying to other chefs who represent them, or who feel like them, or other young chefs, I too can be there. I too can do that. That's really it is. It's just about inspiring the next generation or inspiring your peers. There's no one set color to food. You know that. You know what I mean? Food is a brightness. It's all different facets and things in it. So why can't the representation of the chef who's preparing these dishes be of that color as well?
I believe there's like power in numbers. Do you feel like there's a good community that supports you in DC in the chef community, not just like customers, but what's your thought on kind of like how tight knit the community is of people?
Well, definitely some of the, okay, I'll tell you this, the pastry chefs or the cake bakers in the DMV area, beautifully. We all get along. We see each other at a lot of different events. Like I ran into a lot of them at the Chef for Equality last year, and that was my first time doing that. You know what I mean? So we all banded together and talked, and it was really great to see that. And we all stay connected. We don't get to do as much, but we all do stay connected on what everybody is doing. And I'm always a big supporter. You know what I mean? So regardless of who you are and what you got going on, if I believe in your brand and I see you hustling and pushing yourself out there, I'm always going to support you. And if that simple support means just reposting your flyer or a dish that you made because it looked that damn good, then that's all I'm going to do. When it comes to some of the Black chefs and stuff like that, I don't really intertwine a lot with them, but I'm getting more into them now. To be honest with you, I'm starting to talk a lot more because I was building my brand. You know what I mean? Like I said, we just kind of walking in your day-to-day lives. But now I'm actually starting to network a lot more with other Black and brown chefs in the area to create a tight-knit community.
Yeah, it just seems like there's a lot of support. You know, I got involved with the Private Chef Week last year, which I thought was a great event, and I got to meet so many cool people. It was really different for me because as a white man, I felt like I was the minority. Like I'm going to all these events. I'm like the only white guy there. I was like, oh, this is interesting, but really cool because there are also so many small business owners. And what I've really found through my Chefs Without Restaurants network is it seems like, you know, in talking to these people, the path to growth within a structured restaurant organization is tough for a lot of, especially African Americans or people from different countries. And it's almost easier to like start your own business. Like they don't see the path to being able to move up the ladder internally. So it's like, well, I'll just go start my own personal chef or catering business. And a lot of people have had success with it from what I've seen.
Absolutely agree. That was my story. I was working at Crumbs. I was a store manager there. I had aspirations to be their product assurance guy because they didn't bake on site. So they had every state or city had their own commissary that they would hire to make the product and ship it to them. So then I didn't want to be a district manager. And I said, I want to do product show because I said that could be a model that I can adapt to my business. That's what I was doing. I was learning everything from everybody else. So I was like, while I'm working at Crumbs, the next step for me was that because it felt right. And they would not give me that opportunity. So I wound up leaving, had my resignation letter drafted up for a whole month. It took some pushing, but I wound up pressing that send. And it's been the greatest thing ever. 7 years later, look where I'm at now. You know what I mean? Absolutely. Yeah, thank you. You're absolutely right. It is a little hard to move up because honestly, a lot of people don't believe in the ability for us to be great. You know what I mean? That we are worth anything. We're a myth. Oh, they don't hard work. Oh, you're a hard worker for African American. What is that supposed to mean? You know what I mean? Like stuff like that. So we always sometimes do find ourselves getting the shorter end of the stick where we then have to work two or three times harder. We've been doing that fight for all our lives. So it is easier sometimes to go out there and try to do your own thing. But that also holds a struggle in itself. There was many times I've been to several networking events. Last year was my year. I called it the network. I was at every networking event dealing with any. I wanted, because I was building my team up because I knew something great was coming. And I wanted to build a team up, talking about lawyers and maybe brand strategists and things, just everybody, anybody I needed to help me build and take this brand to the next level. And people will look at me and say, oh, go work and do that. And oh, go do that. And oh, okay, great. The product is great. But do you know this? And do you know that? And I wasn't really the best savvy and business, right? But I can have a product. I know business, but I'm not as good. So they would ask me certain questions that I probably wouldn't know the answer to right then and there. And it would make me look like, oh, you don't know what you're doing type situation.
So, you know, we have so many listeners to the show who are building and growing their businesses. What are the best kind of hires or alliances that you've gotten together with for your business? Like, what do you think is a really important thing that people are maybe missing if they want to build and grow their brand? Like, should it be a marketing person? Should it be an accountant? Like, what was super beneficial to you?
Oh, let me see. So many different people walked in and out of my life to help me out. Honestly, I would say an assistant most of the time is the beneficial person. And the reason why I say that an assistant for me is because I had a lot of the internal things to like make connections with people. You know what I mean? Like you said, hey, you have a nice personality. So I knew I could gravitate towards people. So to me, it was kind of like getting that connection that I made on getting that number or email and then following up with that on top of still building the business and as well as everything else that I wanted to do. But for anybody else, I think it's really about finding something that you know you're not strong at and then putting a system or a person in place to help you navigate and build that.
Do you worry that it loses the personalization? Because that's kind of what I worry about. Like I'm a one-man show and I still am, and I do everything myself. And I feel like the podcast, like people say, you should hire someone to edit the podcast. But it's like, I know what I want to keep in and edit out. And I don't want to just be like done recording this and hand it off to someone who then's like, oh, I don't like what Mr. Bake said and I'll edit that out. Or, you know, like the feel of a personalized email. Like I like communicating to people and saying like, here's the details for our event. Like, I don't know if I'm ready to like hand that off to someone, but I know I have to hire people at some point. I'm not sure who I want to have come onto my team.
Right. I mean, and let me tell you something. That's going to take some time. I did everything. I've been doing my business before it was LLC'd out of the house for years. So I've been doing everything for years. And I literally said to myself, in order for me to grow, in order when you are ready to grow and that fire inside you is burning and saying, yo, it's time to take that next level. And you need to listen to yourself because it's not steering you in the wrong direction. Hey, you need to get somebody else in here to start taking this load off of you so that you can now open yourself up to more opportunities. Because if you burn yourself out on this end, you're not going to be able to see the opportunities that are being presented in front of you because you're too burnt out. You know what I mean? If you want to excel, we're going to have to start bringing people in. And one thing that helped me out was creating a culture. You have a culture. You have a vibe. Your podcast has been running or your brand has been running for X amount of time. It already has a culture and a flow to it. And when you bring somebody in, you need to bring somebody in that mirrors that. And if they don't, you need to help sway them into that direction. And if they don't, remove them. And you start getting people in place that will help you. You know what I mean? I got an assistant and that took a little time for us to get to the language I use, how I run business. And then I also told him, you know, but I also want you to come in and challenge me because I also been doing this for 10 plus years this way. And it may not be correct anymore, especially when I'm talking of the plans for the future. You know what I mean? So he or she may see something different that you may see and you need to be open to that. That's really growth. You got to be open to other opinions to grow. And that's what really the partnership or anybody you bring in should help.
Yeah. Even today, you know, it was really hard. I got an email from a client for my personal chef business and it was like bullet pointed. Like he was really polite, but it was like, on this date, I sent you an email. On this date, you got back to me. On this date, like you said, you'd have this menu to me. I still don't have it. I want to get the ball rolling. And, you know, I've read all your reviews and this kind of way of handling things doesn't seem to be in line with what I know about you. Like kind of where's my thing? And, you know, you have to kind of breathe. It's like, I've had like 4 events in 5 days and, you know, family stuff. And I had an unexpected thing with the doctor and like, I've got this. And it's just like, you want to say that, but you can't say that. And like, you just kind of have to like eat it and say, okay, tonight, like I have to get this done. In my mind, the time frame wasn't that far out. You know, it's like an event months away. Like most of my clients, like I've got people who need menus for October and November and December. And like, this guy's got this thing in like February, but he feels he should be front of the line. And it's like, that's the kind of thing where like, oh man, I just need someone to kind of handle that. Even though I don't see it's a priority. Clearly to them, it's a priority. So we have to figure a way to like get him to the front of the line. But that just means I have to shift a whole bunch of other stuff first.
Right. And you know what? Honestly, what I've learned, I mean, because you, come on, you know, we've learned that the customer's not always right. We know that. We already know that, right? and honestly, I'm honest, you know, and that's another thing. Like I show transparency. I'm nice and respectful, but I'm honest. Like, hey, you know, we sorry about that. You know, you always apologize. You know, it's the number one rule in customer service, listen and apologize, right? Whatever, right? So I'd say that, but we are in, tell them, like if you're watching, if you're reading the Yelp reviews, like he said, if you're watching my growth on social media, if you see me on the show, if you see me out and about, you just saw me, you knew I was out and about 3 days in a row, like I'm going to say that to you, like, oh, I'm so sorry. Unfortunately, we've been backed up doing X, Y, and Z. And we have a few more people ahead of you, but we sure will get to you in a time frame that works for you. And let me tell you something. We are not going to satisfy every client. You know what I mean? We need to get that out of our heads as well. There are going to be some people that their needs are going to be so astronomical to what you can provide right now for them that you're never going to please them. You know what I mean? And we just got to give them the honest truth. Like, hey, this is where I'm at. And this is what I think I can do for you in the time frame. If they want to respect you and they want to work with you, guess what they're going to do? They're going to wait. They're going to respect you. And if they don't, then you never were my client. I understand that I want the business and I want to continue growing and I want the connection. But hey, I can't bend over backwards no more than I have. I don't have any more to give. Yeah. I don't have any more to give. And you have to remember that, because like I tell people, that's why I got an assistant. I got an assistant over COVID, to be honest. And because people with COVID, they became more, I don't want to say nagging, but because of the stress of COVID, it was a lot of pressure on me. And I was already dealing with COVID myself. You know what I mean? Not like dealing with having COVID, but dealing with the level of stress COVID or the level of unease COVID gave me. So I'm dealing with that too. And they don't understand that. So, you know, I would put that in there like, hey, I'm having a rough day today. You know, COVID is really kicking my butt. Do you understand that? Yeah, they're going to say you have a business and you need to maintain that. Yes, and you're absolutely right. But this is where we're at right now. Oh, I had to let go half of my staff. Like, let's be realistic.
Yeah. Yeah, I think most people are understanding. It's still hard because, you know, I think essentially I'm like a people pleaser and you're in the hospitality business. Like, you never want anyone to let go. You never want to let anyone down. And I think it's like, when they come at you with that especially thing, like, you're letting me down. Like, cause that's what it was like saying is like, you don't want to hear that. And I think that's the real hard thing. Whereas if it's almost like, if it was like an outright jerk, you'd be like, okay, whatever. But they's like, oh, you know, with everything I've heard sounds like you're fantastic. And what's going on? Why aren't you fantastic for me? It's like, okay, I guess I'll just like stay up tonight and get that work done.
And that's where you say, hey, I am still this fantastic being. You are that still that person, but right now I'm burnt out. I'm a little tired, and which you are human. So you are able to feel, you got to feel these things. And in order for you to be that fantastic person, I need to take a day off today right now. Or I need to break. I need to breathe to be this fantastic person. You understand what I'm saying? Like, for me to actually start getting on TV shows, I had to really feel and feel good for myself. So when it radiated to people, when I went on show and the production and production companies and the producers saw me, they was like, oh, it's radiating. I love him. Oh my God, he has a lot of energy. He's great. But I had to be in a certain place to exude that. And if I'm not in that great place, I'm never going to exude that. And you're going to always look at me like, what happened to the bubbly Kareem that I'm used to knowing?
Yeah.
I'm burnt out. You know?
Yeah, we all need a break, and COVID's taken its toll on everyone in so many ways. And business has been great for me. How's business for you been?
Oh, business has been good. You know, COVID, we pivoted in the beginning, but now we have partnerships. We are located in two Black-owned establishments, one called Kitchen Cray Cafe, which is in Atlanta, Maryland, and then their other 8th Street location. We have banana pudding on their menu. And then we're partnership with the Black-owned ice cream shop off of Georgia Avenue, where we have all sliced cakes ranging from our award-winning sweet potato all the way to carrot to chocolate on chocolate in their frozen case.
Congrats. That's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. With more partnerships down the line, you already know we got the business award of the Washington Business Journal Award, a Pride Award for 2020. So that put a lot more eyes on me, especially eyes of a businessman in the DMV area, not just a chef in the DMV area, but now a businessman in the DMV area. You know what I mean? So that to me was an elevation of just the brand itself, you know, because now we're not looking at, you know, Mr. Baked Sweets as just a cake company, but we're looking at Mr. Baked Sweets as a premier studio kitchen space or bakery in the DMV area. To me, that's how I look at it as.
And you just crossed 10,000 followers on Instagram like last week or something, right? Woo, woo. Now you can do the swipe up info.
Yes,
that's what everyone wants. They want the 10K swipe up. Like, how did that happen? Was there like a viral piece of content? Like, was there a thing where you got like a ton of people all at once, or was it just like slow and steady? Because again, we talked to a lot of people about Instagram, especially on here. How did that happen with Instagram?
All right. So first and foremost, we came with a goal. The goal was to reach 10K by the end of the year. I walked in 2019 saying, I want to reach 10K by 2019 because I found out that's how you do the swipe up. Like, I'm so glad you said that. So I'm not really big on like social media in terms of like, I'm always on it. Like, so it was just like, oh, that's a great feature because, you know, it's a call to action when you have events, like swipe up, like you don't have to go to get out of it. Go. I just loved it. So I was like, okay, that's a goal because that's a great feature to attract more people to events or get them to sign up if we just wanted their emails. So boom, got that going. I was like, okay, great. Yes, got the swipe up. So what happened was a lot of different things happened over the year. You know, we had COVID, we had the racial disparity, but most recently was my premiere on the Beat Bobby Flay episode last week, Wednesday. Once that bad boy got off of air, it was like everybody, all of my friends and family was reposting me on TV. And I think that a lot of people just loved what they saw. Did you get to see it? So maybe you might be able to speak from your personal experience of, would you come and follow me? Who is this person? And, you know, want to follow the rest of my journey? Because honestly, that's really what it was. Being on the Food Network Beat Bobby Flay episode jumped me.
Where were you number-wise? Like, where were you before the episode? Do you have an idea, roughly?
Yeah. I was close. I was 1960. I was close because of the Washington Business Journal. And then because of a few publications that I went in across the year, across through COVID, really helped boost. Because I think I started the year out at, like, 18-something. 18,000 or something
that's
like
still
that.
Good
I mean,
to
eight,
get up
I mean,
to.
Eight, I mean, 8,000. Excuse
oh,
me.
Oh, 8,000. Yeah.
8,000. I apologize. I'm saying the wrong numbers. 8,000. I was doing like 8,000 or something like that when I started 2020. And then now we have 10K.
Well, that's still good to be at 8,000 at the beginning of the year, though. I mean, that shows like consistent, steady growth. You know, sometimes people come on, it's like they get like 5,000 in like a couple months because of something that happens. And I'm always intrigued at that. You know, it's like you have these famous people, like it's crazy. They could, you know, a Paris Hilton could like post a photo of a ham sandwich and she gets like 17,000 likes. It's like, who's liking a photo of a ham sandwich? Like, what is that about? I'm out here busting my hump trying to like create content and stuff. And I had like 52 people, if I'm lucky, like that photo.
That is so real. The people follow, like when I see people's lives, like especially during COVID, I was like, what is this? These people are watching these people do nothing. They're not doing anything. The people trying to cook in the kitchen. There were people who had horrible cameras. I was like, okay, you people are just watching people do anything. Are these people really that intriguing? And you're right. Like I'm over here on the floor trying to get a good angle, taking my stuff outside to get some of that natural lighting. You know what I mean? Buying backdrops or creating my own. Yeah. No, you go through all of this and they can post a ham sandwich.
Yeah. It's ridiculous the amount of stuff I have for photos. Like I go to Home Depot and I'll be there with my wife looking for something. I'm like, ooh, look at this. It's like a remnant piece of floor that's on sale for $2. IKEA last week, they had like a bookshelf set that they were discontinuing and they were selling like the big shelves for $2 a piece. But it's huge. It's like, I don't know, it's huge. I'm holding out my hands, but it was like $2 and it's like great wood grain thing. I'm like, this will be great because it looks like a natural countertop or like a wood cutting board, but I can take it outside and like put it on a table and it's big enough that you won't see anything behind it. And I was super excited. She's like, why are you buying a shelf from a discontinued, you know, bookshelf that we don't have? I'm like, because it's $2. It's going to be great for my food photography. You know, that's the kind of nerdy stuff I do. Because that stuff's so expensive. Like there's there's some, I keep getting the Instagram ads for like that natural backdrop thing. It's like $79 for like a piece of like cardboard with, you know, paper over it that you put in like this holder thing. I'm like, I can go buy like remnant pieces of wood and tile for much less than that. Like who's
$80
things? It's ridiculous. But that's what we have to do these days. It's like, man, can't I just get back in the kitchen? But, you know, again, it speaks to like the food entrepreneur things. And like, nobody was expecting this. When you get in the food business, I don't think people thought they were going to have to become like a media specialist as well. But it makes us more versatile. It's like, I have a podcast. It's basically like having my own radio show in my basement. Like, how weird is that?
Absolutely. It is. Everywhere living in this instant world. I mean, I think it's actually beautiful because we get to have conversations like this and not have to be in front of each other. We also get to connect and learn. I learned a lot from cross seas about how they're decorating, what's new, what's going on over there. So I love that, connecting with certain people and becoming friends with them if I've never met them. But we're sharing traded secrets or things that we do in the kitchen to create, you know, any artwork or masterpiece or where you ordered something from. So that I do like it. I like that it has been able to connect us and bridge gaps. And also now you get to now see different styles of decorations that are heavily in another country.
So where are you getting your inspiration from? Is it from scrolling Instagram? Are there chefs you'd like to follow? Like, what inspires
you? It is from Instagram a lot, especially when it comes to creating new content. Like, now I'm in this whole, like, mixed media art medium where I just want freehand art. I'm getting into, like, shadings and lights, a little bit of sculpting, you know, things like that. Like, that's where I'm at. So I'm looking at a lot of people who are in Australia, a lot of people who are in, like, Europe, and they're doing things that were, like, Jell-O is on top of the cake, but is creating this beautiful art piece. It's so fantastic. We're using rice paper to create seals that can look like hair and flowing ocean. Like, it's just amazing. You know what I mean? To see all of this stuff. So it's good. And they're doing little tutorials on Instagram. I don't really have one set person that I'm following per se. But I am inspired by a slew of people. It can even be somebody who just only do, let's say, treats, or a chef, or a photographer. You know what I mean? Because a photographer is catching different lights and lighting. So they're inspiring me, one, to create better photos, because now we're mini photographers. And also just create different foods and techniques and play with stuff.
Do you have opportunities to do really creative stuff, or is it that, you know, you have to kind of have the standard cakes and everything, or can you ever do this wild thing? Like, you saw something and you're like, I'm inspired to make that, like a cake with Jell-O on it. Do you ever get to do that and then sell it, or is it just for fun?
I will always do it to try to sell it, unless it's at like an event, like I'm doing like a pop-up event and they're asking for like dummy cakes or display cakes. So I would do it then. But honestly, I always try to do it on a client. And what I would do is, I'm honest. So I tell the client, normally they're my friend or somebody I've dealt with in the past on several orders. And I would say, hey, it's this new technique that I've been working on or that I wanna try with you. Here's a picture of it, and it'll go great with what you're trying to do. Would you be open for me to do that? And most people, honestly, are like, yeah, like, go for it. And then what I have done is kind of drop the price down, because it's the first time doing something, especially if it's a custom cake. I'm always like, well, look, I'm not gonna, because I don't really know how many hours it's gonna take me. So I'm like, all right, I'm not gonna charge you what I think this costs, so I'm gonna charge you this much. And then once I really get the handle on it, I can go now, I always whisper in their ear, don't tell nobody you paid this much for this cake.
Yeah, that's a good plan.
Yeah, because it took me so long. Like, I remember one cake that I'm never going to post. I'm never going to post this cake. As long as I'm the only one doing cakes right now, I'm never posting this, because it took me 5 hours to do one tier.
Yeah. Yeah, I can totally, I can relate to that.
And that was just the decorating. I was like, oh, I'm never doing this again. So I'm not even going to post that. I know how to do it.
Yeah, I have a friend who's a pastry chef, and she actually helped me with the catering last night, and she made for me, it was a treat. It's like the Japanese like milk bread, and she had it stuffed with stuff, and it was really good. And I was like, oh, can I get the recipe? She's like, you can. I said, can I make these mini? Cause I want to put stuff in them. And she said, like, I'm going to tell you, you're not going to want to put these on your menu for like a big party. She's like, so like, before you get all fancy, she's like, I just want to tell you, like, if you're having a party for like 15 people, you're not going to want to be making these things as a little appetizer. Like, you're going to be better off like buying some bread and doing crostinis, but, you know, make them they're delicious.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. Some things are those things. Like, you know, I tell people like, oh, you know, I don't really do that. You know, you have to get, you know, this amount, like a small amount, or, you know, a minimum amount if I'm going to do this special thing. Because I know what it takes to create this thing.
So what makes you stand out? It seems like the market is flooded with people making cakes and cupcakes, and so many of them are like side hustlers. Do you worry about that? Or is it just like you stay in your lane and do your thing and you don't worry about them? Like, how do you stand out?
Well, first number one is in the space that I'm in right now, I can't tell you 5 or 6 years ago, I probably were matching myself up with a lot of people saying, am I doing something better than them? I've been baking cakes and selling cakes for people before we had Instagram. So to me, I've always been in my niche, always been doing what I'm doing. I think the number one thing for me is consistency with the taste and the quality of the product that you're getting, may it be a cake to a cookie, and then also customer service. You know what I mean? That's a big thing for me. Like I said, I worked in several bakeries in New York City, and I know one of the big things, and it didn't have to do with any race. It was just like customer service was a big thing. People wanted their stuff when they wanted it. People wanted to know information. So I made sure when I started this business and got the LLC that I was the customer as well as the business owner. And I always do these tests with myself. If I was the customer, what would they want from me? And I think that's what really sets me apart from a lot of people. And I'm personable. You know, and I make sure that when I brought my assistant in, he is personable. You know what I mean? He talks to you about your day, about your event, and that's how I engage with some clients as well. So it worked perfectly. And I think that's what's really different between me and a lot of people, because I don't make anything fancy. You know what I mean? I make your standard comfort food. I'm talking banana pudding, sliced layer cakes. Like, that's nothing different than the next person can make. I just think that the quality of the product is good. I bake from scratch. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but I love that I bake from scratch. I talk about baking from scratch and talk about how passionate I am. And I think people connect and radiate with that more than anything.
So one dessert, if you could have just one dessert, what would it be?
Now, I just told you I loved sweets when I was a kid. You gonna tell me one dessert?
Yeah.
And then I'm going to be hard at it because I'm a Libra, where we are so indecisive, so we can never pick A or B, you know? But one dessert. It's going to be a layer cake. I can't tell you which one because I'm a seasonal person. So right now, I'm all about spices, apples, pumpkin, sweet potato. You know what I mean? And then when we get into spring, summer, I'm all about citrus, light, airy, custards, things like that.
Okay, fair enough. I'll go with that.
All right, thank you. But I love a sliced cake, though. I love a sliced cake. So you can always win me over with a sliced cake.
It was so funny. I have to say, last night I catered one of these micro weddings, and they had a wedding cake, and I don't know where they got it from, but it was like, it looked like there was just like a crumb coat on the outside with not a lot of frosting. And I think the groom said 25 times to his now wife, "Man, I wish you had gotten a cake that had some frosting on it." And I thought she was going to kill him, but like all night he kept looking at this cake that like barely had a layer. And I hope I'm not calling out anyone who I know, but I don't know who it was, but it was just funny. He talked so many times like, "Why did you get a wedding cake that has no frosting? Like, you can see the bare cake through the outside." And I just kept looking at my assistant, who's a pastry chef, and I'm like, "Oh my God, he's not going to let this cake thing go. Like, you should have made their wedding cake too."
Well, you know, that style is called naked cake. That was really popular probably three years ago. It's a huge popular thing, especially a lot of brides who are doing like outdoor weddings or like barn themed weddings. That really worked perfectly because that rustic of the exposed cake coming through that barely shallowed thin layer of buttercream was really, really popular. I'm actually doing one of those cakes next weekend for a wedding. And a lot of people also get it because they don't like frosting, you know? Yeah. So they're like, I don't want any frosting on my cake. So give me a naked cake.
Wow. Yeah. I haven't seen many of those lately. Like, I love a good buttercream on there. Like, cover that cake up. I want some frosting on there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the same thing for me.
So I always like to ask my guests kind of as a final question, what are some of your favorite resources, especially for business owners? Like, what's a game changer? It could be a cookbook, a website, a YouTube channel, an app. Like, what's something that's beneficial that someone who's, you know, whether it be sweets or savory, something that you would think would be beneficial for their business?
I'm going to actually tell you a bunch of self-help books, to be honest. It's a book I read by Lisa Nichols called No Matter What. I started that. I read that book back in 2008, and it was a game changer for my mentality of how I moved through life and then how I was moving through my business. I realized that, and honestly, would help me get on TV shows, I realized that it was the person that I needed to feed in order to be successful, in order to be full enough to give to anybody else, if it was through my passions or if it was just saying hello. So I definitely think that if I have any tool to anybody, I would say work on yourself, work on being happy, work on loving yourself more, because that's what's really going to radiate through your work and through your passion, whatever it may be.
Yeah, I love it. I'm a big fan. That's what I tell people all the time. When I talk about recommended reading, like I read a lot of Stoic philosophy. I read a lot of things, you know, that kind of keep you balanced and centered, because I think if you're uptight and just not happy with who you are, that's going to show in everything, your personal life, your business, and all of that. So I 100% agree. I don't know of that book, so I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah, it's a powerful book. It was the first book, self-help book that I read, that she shared her story. Then she gave you tools within each chapter about how to adapt, because she called them developing muscles. So each muscle, she at the end of the chapter, she would give you tools that you can then go home and use to start strengthening or developing that set muscle, whatever it may be, to strengthen you as a whole being, or to get you on the path of, you know, to be a whole being, of just be grounded in yourself and love yourself. We hold on a lot of stuff, you know what I mean? And that's what really opened a lot of opportunities. If people are still listening about how to get on TV, that's what opened up a lot of opportunities for me to get on TV, was to be a great stewardess of myself. And then it radiated and poured out to people, you know, and they just gravitated towards it. Oh my God, you're so authentic. You're so beautiful. You're so this. And I'm like, I'm just being me. I'm happy with who I am.
Mm, that sounds fantastic. I'm going to go check it out. I'm a big reader. I always have at least probably 3 books going. I'm always doing something on audio, reading something in the morning, reading something at night. It's a mix of fiction, nonfiction. I've really gotten into nonfiction. I can't even really think of the last fiction book I've read. Like, it's always in the self-help space or the business space, or just like weird stuff. Like, I'm reading a lot of like science and technology kind of stuff, like futuristic kind of things. But I think that can also help with the future. Like, when you think about right now, like pivoting and all this stuff, it's like, you know, what is AI going to do to our businesses? What's going to happen with automation and all that? And I don't think people realize where we're at with things. I just read a book called The Future is Faster Than You Think. And, you know, all these people are like, robots can't replace me. It's like, they're already doing that in some places. Like, you better check out what robots can do, you know, and then figure out how to harness that power so you're not obsolete yourself.
Absolutely. I'm going to pick up that book too. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Peter Diamandis co-authored it with, I can't think of the other guy, Stephen Kotler, and they have 3 books. One is Bold and one is called Abundance. But the ideas of one of them is like making the world a better place through technology. So it talks about like, you know, building these water filtration systems that you can take to like places in Africa and like drop it in like the dirtiest water and it'll filter clean water. And then what happens when these women aren't spending 14 hours a day walking just to get water, you know, like a basic need. But there's also opportunities from a monetary basis that like there's money to be made in helping people in the world. And then what happens when like all these people now don't have to do these mundane tasks, and now that they have the internet, when all these people are going to come on the internet, they keep talking about how many more people every year are going to have internet access that didn't. You're going to have all these smart people on the grid who never had a voice that nobody knew of, but now you might have this guy in Egypt who's a brilliant, you know, microbiologist who no one ever knew about, but now he's got a 5G network and he's gonna, you know, cure COVID. Like, there's just so many interesting things out there. So yeah, I love reading books like that. I'll get you hooked up. Like, this guy has a great daily email list where he sends, it's only positive things and it's all about like the future and technology. And I just love getting that thing where every day it's not this thing like the world is on fire. It's like, no, the world is actually a really good place and here's like some of the cool stuff that's happening. And it's not like,
oh good, give me that. I do all positive things.
Yeah.
I know nobody else can see me here, but like my vision board is behind me because we're in my room. Like, I'm all about, you know, continuously keeping that light and burning the fire in me. So please, please do send me that.
Thanks so much for coming on the show. I hope you had a good time.
I did. I had a great talk. Thanks for having me. And yeah, hope to be back.
Yeah, definitely. So to all our listeners, this has been the Chefs Without Restaurants podcast. As always, you can find us at chefswithoutrestaurants.com.org and on all social media platforms. Thanks so much and have a great week.
Peace.
Thanks for listening to the Chefs Without Restaurants podcast. And if you're interested in being a guest on the show or sponsoring a show, please let us know. We can be reached at chefswithoutrestaurants@gmail.com. Thanks so much.